All right there, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of all ages. Let's try this again here. Seems like we got a little lag going on, but y'all give me 1 second here. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, you are now tuned into the Investor Show. As always, this is your gracious host, the Prince of Investing, Prince Dice, coming to you guys and girls live all the way from the beautiful city and state of Denver, Colorado. Don't forget to hit that like, subscribe, comment, and share button. And as always, I don't have a lot of time, and I definitely know you guys and girls don't have a lot of time, so we're going to jump straight into it. So as you guys and girls will already know, this is a very good episode. A lot of people ask me about the cannabis industry, the marijuana industry, the weed industry, or whatever may have you. And today I brought on our returning guest, the CEO of the Colorado Harvest Company. He owns the Colorado Harvest Company's three dispensaries here in the Denver, Colorado area. And he's also was one of the pioneers and one of the first people to get their marijuana license to be able to have a dispensary here. So what better person to add on here to bring on to talk about the state of the cannabis industry? So we're going to talk about, people ask me all the time, Prince, should I invest? I know it's going to be a big industry and things like that. But without further ado, let me bring on my guest. Everybody give a nice round of applause. Mr. Tim, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, thank you, Prince. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Outstanding. So, from, you know, what's the treat that you got behind you there?
So this is my fake cannabis plant that I ordered from Amazon, but they don't sell them anymore, unfortunately. They sent me this one and then said no more for you. So I got the one and only one that's around here. So we keep it in the office.
Okay, nice, nice. Nice cannabis there. Now I want to ask you this, the first thing I want to get into it about, right? Was when you look at the cannabis industry. If you was to invest into the cannabis industry, where would you invest? So many people, you got so many penny stocks out there. And the last time you was on 2 years ago, you said you couldn't publicly traded if you was a company. So right now, how would you invest into the cannabis industry knowing what you know today?
Wow. So I think it's still difficult for people to really get in the door. There's still the large American markets are still not available to cannabis companies, although there are a couple that have snuck in there and are trading on some of the larger markets. But with our neighbors to the north moving forward with legalization in Canada, a lot of the action is happening further up north. So the company that we sold last time I spoke with you, sold to a company called Slang Worldwide, was the whole package of open vape products, is now available on the OTC market here in the States, but as well as on the Canadian Securities Exchange. And for the OTC is relatively new. Most of the time it's spent trading on the Canadian Securities Exchange. And that's where most of the cannabis stocks that are out there right now are. So how do you do it is a hard question, because you have to find someone who's a Canadian stockbroker to start with at this very moment.
Okay. Now, I want to ask you this question, right? You're the CEO and owner of Colorado Harvest Company. Y'all doing annual revenue around $10 million.
Yep.
I wanted to ask the question, do you plan to take the Colorado Harvest Company?
So that's a great question. I think at this moment, the answer is no. But 6 months ago, we were just under contract with a company that was considering going public with it. But if we combined forces with a larger group, then I would consider going down that path. But I've never taken a company public, and I don't think I would lead the charge on this one as a first go of it either. So I'm pretty happy being, you know, a closely held private company right now. And we'll see what the future brings, because there's always something right around the corner. And that's going to be the case now, too, with the new administration.
Okay. Now, with that being said, you're being a private held company. You say that, you know, you may go public one day. I want to ask you the question. Is the Colorado Harvest Company, is it open to private investors, someone who may be tuning in, watching? Can I invest in the Colorado Harvest Company?
Great question. So the answer is no, you can't. So the reason that that was set up was way back when, you know, 10 years ago now, when the Marijuana Enforcement Division was set up, they were very concerned about where is the money coming from, how is money distributed through these companies. They wanted to make sure that there was not issues with the black market leaking into this new legal market. And so there, so that is one of the deals with owning a cannabis company is investment is very difficult to find. We have to approve our investments through the MED, and we're not able to just accept private investors into our fold because they have to go through such a rigorous licensing process through the MED. So really that's where we are with marijuana legalization at a national scale, is that's what's being held back. There are no private investors into the cannabis space right now, unless, like we just talked about here, you're looking at Canada.
Okay. So when we see these news articles that come up and say, oh, this person invested into this marijuana company or whatever the case may be, that makes sense. Are they lying to us?
No, there are some. So, well, the company that we were under contract with is called Schwazi, and they were formerly Medicine Man Technologies. And their stock is for sale on the OTC right now. There are a number of different companies that are out there that you could purchase their stock. There have been varying degrees of success within these companies. Some have done quite well and some not at all. But by and large, the movement is moving in the direction of federal legalization, or at least decriminalization, which will open up these markets to a substantial just substantially more people who are able to access them. Right now, it's very limited.
Okay. So we got one comment here that says, hopefully he brought us gift bags for us. But what are the advantages of being, I don't even know what that's called, bewibbling, a grower or an owner of a dispensary?
So in Colorado right now, this has not always been the case, but when this all started, so Colorado Harvest Company just turned 11 years old. Last month was our 11-year anniversary. And because we're an older company in town, we started under the original rules, which required what's called vertical integration. So we started with production facilities and with retail facilities. And because we started that way, we are still that way. So I don't have to choose between owning it or being a grower. We are both. But a lot of the companies that you're seeing coming out now, newer companies, are specializing, and that makes sense. Either you are really good at plant production or you're really good at retail sales, but you're probably not really good at both of those things. And people are setting up either production facilities or retail spaces. And now there are standalone grows that don't have retail, and there are standalone retails that don't have grows. If I had to start all over and pick again, I'd probably stay on the grow side just because I get along with plants better than people.
So if you're a grower, you can just grow it and sell it to people to sell.
You sell it in a regulated market. So it does have to travel through what the state calls metric, which is how they interface my inventory with how I pay taxes. So they track our inventory through this program called metric. And so you'd be involved in that metric system, and then you can sell your wholesale to other people who are licensed in the metric system as well.
Okay. Now, I wanted to speak on something here. We recently saw, we're going to pull this up here, an 8K report that came out from the Medicine Man. They said that they were buying you out for $2.5 million, $4 million in cash, $2.8 million in $2.8 million in shares of that particular company. This is their AKA report they filed back in September last year. What happened with that deal?
Sure. Well, this is one of the biggest deals that's ever been put together in the state of Colorado, definitely in the cannabis industry. And this was a lot of the companies that have been around since the very beginning calling each other and deciding to come together. This was going to be a group that looked like 34 dispensaries, 8 different enormous grows. One of them is the largest in the state of Colorado. A number of different MIPs, which are the marijuana infused product manufacturers, the concentrate and edible companies. And these guys were going to come together and form the largest cannabis company in Colorado. So when they called and said, would you like to participate in that? We said, we absolutely want to participate in that. But then, as luck would have it, you know, this whole COVID thing that we're dealing with was when the money had to be raised, and they went on the roadshow. And I believe they worked really hard. And they always had their focus on the in the right place. But at the end of the day, it just didn't come through. Not enough money was raised. And I am under the impression they still have a couple active deals out there, but by far and away, what was proposed is very different than what's reality right now. And so we fell out of contract is what really happened. They didn't raise the money. We fell out of contract. And so we just go back to doing what we were doing before. And I guess they were probably still out there trying to raise money.
Okay. So essentially the company was, they came to you and they said, hey, we're going to build the largest cannabis company in the world pretty much. And do you want to be a part of it? And we're going to buy you out. Who's going to be a part of that company? Mm-hmm.
Correct. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they put you up on the contract, you know, we're going to give you this many shares, we're going to give you this much cash, and then for short, you just didn't the deal.
Right. Right. So some of it's cash, some of it's stock. You're along for the ride. Once we sign that deal, we're bound in a legal contract to them through the process. As they go through due diligence and raise their money, they go do their roadshow and try to raise that money to make the whole company happen. In this case, they fell short, and so companies started to fall out of contract, and we were one of the first ones to sign on, so we were one of the first ones to fall out of contract, and like I said, almost everyone has fallen out of contract with that deal at this point.
Okay, so this is a good question. We always hear about this one. The Aurora Cannabis Company,
ACC, sure.
You know, we're here in Aurora. So what is that about? Have you heard of them? Are they going to work? Or are they out of Canada? What do you know about Aurora Cannabis, ACB?
So I own some of their stock. It's been disappointing. it has been. You know, I mean, they are one of the bigger players that are up there. It seemed like they could really make a run for it. Mm-hmm. It just seems like they really had trouble in all sorts of ways. I think this year they produced too much product and it drove their prices down lower again. So we'll just see. I mean, I think when Canada made that move and a lot of these companies moved onto these markets, they were hoping for the United States to move a little quicker behind them. There's just not enough consumers in Canada to support this whole market. The United States could open right below it and then provide all of the people that are necessary to supply the volume of production that these companies are to support these prices and really like move the whole thing forward.
So we have more smokers here in America than Canada, what you're saying?
Do we have more what?
Consume, like, you know, marijuana consumers?
Oh yeah, for sure. We just have more people, people in general. Like there's the population of Canada is like having a couple of, you know, medium-sized states living above us. So we need the United States to move forward to really create a viable market that's large, that really supports import and export, that, you know, products are coming over from Canada, that we're shipping things there, that turns us into a global economy like every other commodity is. It's crazy that cannabis is only grown in Denver, Colorado, and they can only be sold in Denver, Colorado. It's pretty old school. Like, Budweiser doesn't have their Midwestern distribution plant up in Fort Collins so that they can only sell beer in Fort Collins. They're shipping that to all the states in the Western United States. And cannabis companies just can't take advantage of those economies of scale yet because products aren't allowed to cross state lines.
Okay. I have a question. You let me know my thought process. So when I look at the marijuana industry, there are a ton of companies out there, right? All of them market. I know this would be a valuable industry in the future. I don't know when. I know it will be, buying marijuana would be like buying a cigarette in the future that I look at, right? It's becoming more culturally susceptible. But I don't know which company to pick. And I believe that 70 to 90% of these marijuana companies are going to disappear and vanish. Mm-hmm. You know, the cream is going to rise to the top of it. And I'm sure. My process is to kind of wait to see who weathers the storms. Did pick. What do you think of that investment thought process?
Sure. Well, I mean, I don't think you're too wrong. I think that's a pretty safe way to go. There are also some clear leaders that have jumped out at the beginning here. Some of these larger companies, like especially down in Florida, there's a large company down there that it definitely has a sizable grip on a very large consumer base down there that will eventually, Florida will go recreational too. And I think what we're really all waiting for is not one company to do well, but we need legalization to happen. We're still trying to operate these companies in violation of the federal government, who's still hitting these companies with the worst deals on taxes that are available to them. There's still no markets for lending. I can't go to, go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that. That's going to bring us into this question right here. How does the cannabis industry bank its money? You know,
great question.
If I went in, you know, I'm active in the military, so of course I can't go in and buy marijuana. But if I was going in and make a purchase on marijuana, how does the money go? Because you can't put it in a traditional bank.
Sure. So that used to be the case. Now there are a handful of banks. I'm only talking about what's going on in Colorado here, but there are a handful of banks that have moved forward. All of them are credit unions that are not federally insured, so they don't work with the federal government on their insurance program. And they have moved forward with the rules and regulations that allow cannabis companies to have bank accounts. So currently, Colorado Harvest Company has bank accounts and has for a while. So when we do payroll, today's payday also. So all the employees got direct deposit payroll. And so on that side, we write checks to vendors and all that feels like normal business. But when a consumer comes in, paying in cash is the easiest way for us. So we accept cash payments. We do debit cards, but it's really more what is really a cashless ATM machine. And then we have ATM machines in the stores also. And so there are several ways people can pay us. But at the end of the day, an armored car comes and picks up all the money and takes it to the bank. And that's the easiest way at this point for us to do it. Maybe in the future, we'll be able to really take debit cards and credit cards as well, and then we won't have to deal with as many cash transactions. But right now, all the dispensaries in the state of Colorado are still mostly cash-based because of the federal government's unwillingness to give us access to banks.
Okay. So somebody asked a question here, Ms. Ruby. How you doing, Ms. Ruby? She said, Ken, you asked him about Planet 13.
Sure.
What do you think about Planet 13?
So they're not here. They're not in Denver. I know they are. They're a big company. I know their big store that I've seen is out in Las Vegas. I don't know much about them other than they're just one of the big retail stores that's jumped into the space here. I don't know what their aspirations are as far as world domination or moving to Colorado. Colorado has recently gotten a couple new, people from out of town. Most recently, Cookies brand opened on South Broadway, and their California brand that's just come here. But this is all still very new. There's not huge brands out there like alcohol has or even pharmaceutical companies where these are well-known names that are in the industry. We're still waiting to see if when those emerge. There's not a Jack Daniels of cannabis or a Jim Beam or a Molson Coors out there yet. So no one's owned the market that way.
Okay. Now you hinted on this earlier. You talked about laws, recent laws, and how the federal government impedes upon the cannabis industry.
Right.
Do you think the government is moving to open up or they're clamping down? How they kind of make the laws?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's varied between administrations. And now that we've been around for long enough to live through a couple different administrations, we've seen how things ebb and flow with different, depending on who is in charge. So marijuana was sold to the people in Colorado is regulated like alcohol. And it couldn't be further from the truth. Cannabis is not regulated like alcohol. It's absolutely regulated like cannabis. And so I feel like some of the rules have absolutely helped move cannabis into mainstream, from the packaging to just the way that people shop in the stores, that everyone has to be 21, that there's child-resistant packaging, that all products are tested for potency, for mold and mildews, for off-label use of pesticides. Those are all things that have moved cannabis up to the front to be ready for a launch on a national scale and be a large consumer industry product that's out there. So some of those rules have helped, but things like denying access to banking or penalizing cannabis companies on their taxes just because they're cannabis companies are things at the federal level that we're waiting to change.
How are you taxed different? What is the taxes on the cannabis? How does that work?
Sure. Oh, man, that's a whole show in and of itself, Prince. But like in a nutshell, it works like this. So cannabis companies are subject to a rule called 280E. And 280E was put in place to penalize companies that run federally illegal businesses. So sometimes it's easier to talk about it as not a cannabis company, like if we had a hitman company or something like that. Like you still have to pay taxes on it, but you're not going to be allowed to deduct your cost of advertising. You can't deduct your place where you do business. You can't deduct the payroll for the other hitmen. And so those same kind of rules are applied to cannabis as well. So we don't get to deduct our rent. We don't get to deduct our advertising. We don't get to deduct our payroll. And so rent, payroll, and advertising are three of the biggest deductions any business has. And so once you take those deductions away, all of a sudden your taxable income is much, much higher. And that is the unfair tax. So we don't pay a percent. We pay a rate that can't even be calculated until we do our taxes. And sometimes it's as high as 80% on every profit dollar that we make can be taxed at the federal level that high. Which is just is meant to do exactly what it does. It pulls all the money out of the company.
Wow. Okay. Now with potentially a new president.
Oh, he's coming. That's going to happen.
Okay. It's looking.
There's a new president coming.
What type of impact do you think he'll have on cannabis?
So he's got a long history in government, and not all of it has been pro-cannabis, but most recently he's been more open to it. I watched the vice presidential debate also, and I saw the vice president-elect Harris say cannabis decriminalization is a part of the priority of the new group coming in. And so I'm excited to hear that. That's a big part of legalization, is just being able to talk about it. There's never been a vice presidential candidate who talked about decriminalization of cannabis ever. So just the fact that Kamala is willing to talk about it is a big step in the right direction. But it would be my hope that we could move past that it becomes a states' rights issue, and that states like Colorado that choose to deal in legal cannabis get to continue to do so, and those that operate the businesses in those legal states aren't penalized for doing it.
Okay. Now, when you look at private investors, are you even interested into that? If it did become a law of like, hey, you can trade like a regular company, you can take private shares.
Sure.
Would be something you'd be interested in?
Of course. I mean, we haven't done it, so I'm not positive, but I mean, we're always looking for capital. That's our limiting restraint always. And I don't think that's unique to just cannabis companies. Like, there are new locations we would like to move into. There are a larger grow, 5 new stores, all those things cost money. And access to capital is something that we really suffer from, because we can't go to the bank and take out a loan to do those things. So we really operate in the most fiscally responsible way any business could. We don't spend money we don't have. We only have so much in our bank account, and we do the best we can with what we have, which is a blessing and a curse. Maybe we would have 10 stores, but we'd be up to our necks in debt. And as it is, we have 3 stores, but we own them ourselves, and we don't owe anyone any money for them. And so it's a blessing and a curse, but there's a silver lining on that side of it too. So we're not in debt, but we wish we maybe could be a little more.
just
a little debt, not a lot of debt, a little debt.
I think that'll be an interesting perspective to definitely raise some capital to be able to say private investors and things like that. With the particular industry going forward and wondering who's out there. But I got to ask you this question. Who is the juggernaut of industry right now? Like you said, there are no big brands. Big brands taking over the marijuana industry. Who is the right now that you look at?
There's a few that I think could move forward. Like the Cronos Group is a huge alcohol industry group. Is put a bunch of money into cannabis recently, all of it up in Canada. I think they're placing their bets heavily on cannabis moving forward through legalization. But in terms of a juggernaut, in a positive way, that could be them. But the biggest juggernaut in a negative way is the U.S. federal government. Like, they need to get out of the way. Make a decision. Is it legal? Is it not legal? Or is it going to be allowed or not? But this gray area where we operate right now, where we can operate in the state, but we get penalized on our taxes. We don't get the same access to bank accounts, but we still have to pay the man, is just unfair. It's just a strange place to find yourself. Like, move forward or don't, but I mean, we're just sitting in the middle of the fence for years now. So time to make some decisions.
So essentially, if you got rid of the tax, cannabis industry would explode.
Absolutely. Oh my. I mean, so in this last election, along with a new administration, there are five new states that came on into the marijuana fold. Some of those really unusual players that you might have guessed would be more toward the end, like Mississippi and South Dakota jumping in there into the marijuana game too. I think a lot of these states are looking for ways that they can increase their revenue during COVID at a time when there's not a lot of other opportunities for it. And cannabis legalization is one way that they can increase their bottom line. I mean, just those five states coming on are expected to increase the total value of cannabis by $37 billion. $2.5 billion for a total of $37 billion by 2024. These are big numbers. The cannabis industry is no joke. It's going to be a serious player. It just needs the federal government to make up its mind when it's going to take the cuffs off so we can really go.
And who would you put your bet on? Like, what would you, if you was an investor, you know that this energy is there, and you know it's going to explode. Like, I know the industry is going to be big. Eventually, we'll figure it out. But I'm thinking, like, who's going to, you know, how can I take advantage?
Oh man, I don't know how to answer that, Prince, because we're a smaller company. We're sort of a medium-sized fish in this whole thing. So, if you're looking into investing, what I would look at are companies that are selling things that people are actually using. So most cannabis consumers still smoke cannabis. So if you're looking into investing in a company that does something radically different with the plant than what consumers do with it, then I would be a little more careful about that. There are a lot of places that you could go to. I'm afraid to get pinned down to say like one to invest in, though, because so many of them are smoke and mirrors and haven't panned out. I mean, I told you I have some Aurora Cannabis stock. I also definitely hold on to some Slang stock as well. And I think those guys are on the up and up for sure and have been for a while now. I think they will emerge as a large brand in the space. There are a number of different dispensary groups that are moving forward in a big way too that are not publicly traded yet. And we'll see, maybe Colorado Harvest Company will be one of those, but my guess is we're not big enough and we'll get gobbled up by a larger player and get rolled into a bigger deal similar to what we were, just almost a part of.
So you're pretty much saying eventually you'll be brought out.
I think so. I don't see us as big enough to eat people. I think we're probably small enough to get eaten. But you know, that's also a way that we can continue to grow in a space that we might not otherwise be able to grow in.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, giving those great answers and questions.
Thanks, friends.
Is there anything else you want to leave the audience out there with?
Well, I mean, continue supporting your local cannabis companies. We are the closest thing to farm to table that's out there. We produce locally, we employ locally, we sell locally, and we buy locally. So your cannabis companies are farm to table.
Got it. All right, Sim, it was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Prince.
To the next video podcast, cartoon, or whatever you see me doing around the globe. Peace, safe. I'm out.